are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
Consumes and casts a bright light. May our chalice flame consume our regrets for the past, our fears about the future, and our worries about today. May it light for us a path of joy and peace. Good morning and welcome to our service of worship, and especially warm welcome to those worshipping with us for the first time today or whom we haven't seen for a while. You are welcome here in Unitarian House, regardless of your ethnic origin, religious background, marital status, gender identity or preferences. Our central principle is to respect the inherent worth and dignity of every person. My name's Jenny Dyster, the current president of the Committee of Management and regular worship leader. The land we meet on today is the traditional land of the Kaurna people. We respect and bless their spiritual relationship with country and their elders past and present. Our church is a spiritual community, one that supports you in seeking and following your own spiritual path. Please do join us after the service for tea, coffee and conversation. A bicky as well, if you're so inclined. Today's service is the second of a series that I'm developing using a text published this year by Susan Littow, The Power of Ethics. It relates to our goal of world community with peace, liberty and justice for all, and also, inextricably, our concern for equity, justice and compassion in human relations. It's the green and red slices on the Unitarian pie here on our portable principles banner. I'm going to invite John to do the story for all ages because we do have some children here, but I'm sure the adults will particularly enjoy this little offering.
So this story is about a mouse. A mouse looked through the crack in the wall to see the farmer and his wife open a package. What might this contain? The mouse wondered. He was devastated to discover it was a mouse trap. Retreating to the farmyard, the mouse proclaimed the warning. There is a mouse trap in the house. There is a mouse trap in the house. The chicken clucked and scratched, raised her head and said, Mr. Mouse, I can tell this is a grave concern to you, but it is of no consequence to me. I cannot be bothered by it. The mouse turned to the pig and told him, There is a mouse trap in the house. There is a mouse trap in the house. The pig sympathised, but said, I am so very sorry, Mr. Mouse, but there is nothing I can do about it but pray. Be assured, you are in my prayers. The mouse turned to the cow and said, There is a mouse trap in the house. There is a mouse trap in the house. The cow said, Wow, Mr. Mouse, I'm sorry for you, but it's no skin off my nose. So the mouse returned to the house, head down and dejected, to face the farmer's mouse trap alone. That very night, a sound was heard throughout the house, like the sound of a mouse trap catching its prey. The farmer's wife rushed to see what was caught. She did not see it was a venomous snake whose tail the trap had caught. The snake bit the farmer's wife. The farmer rushed her to the hospital, and she returned home with a fever. Everyone knows you treat a fever with fresh chicken soup. So the farmer took his hatchet to the farmyard for the soup's main ingredient. The wife's illness continued, so friends and neighbours came to sit with her around the clock. To feed them, the farmer butchered the pig. The farmer's wife did not get well. She died. Yes, you'll guess that. So many people came for her funeral. The farmer had the cow slaughtered to provide enough meat for all of them. The mouse looked upon it all from his crack in the wall with great sadness. Why do you think he had great sadness?
He warned them, but they all died. They wouldn't listen to them, would they?
So the next time you hear someone is facing a problem and think it doesn't concern you, remember, when one of us is threatened, we all are at risk. This journey called life, we must keep an eye out for one another and make an extra effort to encourage one another. Each of us is a vital thread in another person's tapestry. Do you understand that piece there at the end? A tapestry, an embroidery thing, makes a picture, and it's made up of lots of simple little ones, but it makes a beautiful picture at the end, and that's what life's like. You know, we're all different threads in this life, and we all weave in and weave out together.
Yeah.
So, poor old mouse was left alone without any friends. Okay, thanks very much for listening.
Thank you, and that was a rather shorter version than Agatha Christie's Mousetrap. I actually discovered it in our Lectio Divina readings and then did a bit of a search and found some internet versions, and Helen very kindly did the pictures. It's our tradition to share significant events in our spiritual life in an open forum of fellowship. Light a candle from our chalice and tell us as briefly as possible about it. You may prefer to light a candle in silence. Listening with an open heart and mind is the most important part of this practice. I'll light the first and last candles. Kierkegaard said the purpose of prayer is not to influence God, but gently and gradually to transform ourselves. The purpose of meditation is the same. So take a moment and, sitting comfortably, draw your attention within. Close your eyes if you wish, or maybe just cast them down. Be comfortable. Be calm. Be wholly within your own being. You will hear Brendan come in with the interlude when it's time to return to our more usual state of mind. Thank you. now going to ask Aaron to come and present the reading for today, which is from Susan's book, The Power of Ethics.
Scattered Power. When Delaney Van Riper was a child, she was bubbly and full of energy. But her father noticed that she walked primarily on her tiptoes. As a genetic counsellor, A.J. Van Riper knew this could be a first sign of a genetic disorder. His fears were confirmed when, at the age of 7, Delaney was diagnosed with Charcot-Marie-Tooth, CMT, a disease that, while not fatal, has no cure. It would eventually cause his daughter's ligaments to tighten and her limbs and muscles to slowly atrophy and weaken. As a child, Delaney wore leg braces that made her feel unique among her peers. But by the time she was a teenager, her physical differences were frustrating and emotionally painful. Then in 2017, during her senior year of high school, she received an email from the laboratory of Dr. Bruce Conklin, a senior investigator at the Gladstone Institutes, a non-profit biomedical research centre affiliated with UC San Francisco, where he is a professor. Dr. Conklin was seeking volunteers to participate in a scientific research that could potentially be life-changing. In fact, he and his team were investigating the development of a cure for people with Delaney's exact type of CMT using a new gene editing technology. Delaney accepted the invitation to take part in the CRISPR study and made a visit to Conklin's lab. In early 2020, we spoke on the phone. Delaney told me that her participation in the study required little more than giving her researchers a couple of vials of blood. She also signed a consent form allowing them to use her blood to study other diseases. From her samples, researchers isolated her blood cells and slowly coaxed them into becoming induced pluripotent stem cells, or primitive cells that can be differentiated into any other kind of cell. The scientists would work to convey Delaney's cells into the exact type of nerve cells that contain her genetic mutation. From there, they can cut out the flawed genetic material in the hope of one day injecting the improved nerve cells back into Delaney's spine and muscles to alleviate her symptoms. As Delaney explained it to me, she learned that it is much easier to cut unwanted material than to add new genetic material. Genes have two strands, the famous double helix, she says. In my case, one strand is healthy and the other is not. Don't need the unhealthy strand for cell reproduction. Put another way, how she says her father describes it. If you buy wood to build a house from two factories, and one sells good wood and one sells rotten wood, you cut out the rotten vendor and you buy wood only from the good factory, and then you can still build the house. 3 years after Delaney joined Conklin's study at the Gladstone Institutes, Dr. Conklin and I spoke over the phone. He cautioned that developing a CMT treatment will take years, with many technical hurdles that still need to be overcome. But because Delaney's disease progresses slowly, he is optimistic that he has time to conduct the research properly. In fact, Dr. Conklin considers a cure very promising and likens it to scaling Mount Kilimanjaro. Hard, but achievable. Nothing in experimental medicine is 100% sure. That is why we call it an experiment, he says. But I'm very confident that we can reach our goals. In the meantime, Delaney says her confidence and ease has grown as she continues to contribute to the science and educate herself. When I asked her if she has any thoughts about how other people might approach gene therapies, whether as a potential patient, research subject, or to develop an opinion, I was impressed by her answer. Delaney says that the two most important questions we should ask ourselves first include, firstly, why do you want to do it? What values are driving you? And second, what effect could it have on other people? In framework terms, she's asking us to consider our principles, as well as the stakeholders and the consequences. In a recent study for the Gladstone Institute's blog, Delaney wrote that the opportunity to be part of Dr. Conklin's research gives her, quote, one of the most dangerously wonderful gifts, hope. Hope that I could be cured. Hope that I could live as a normal person. And if not hope for me, then hope for someone else.
Power of ethics, how to make good choices in a complicated world. Today's focus will be on scattered power. A month ago, I presented an address on ethics exploring how the complicated nature of our world disrupts the notion of binary choice and how sticking with that model can result in crash and burn, literally in the case of Boeing, but metaphorically in the case of us facing the ordinary dilemmas of how much freedom we give our kids, whether or not to use this IT platform or buy this or that software or hardware. The author of The Power of Ethics produced a useful little toolkit to apply to our decision making. It's a four-step framework involving principles, information, stakeholders, and consequences. In her book, Susan Littell describes six forces which drive ethics, forcing a rift between what you're allowed to do and what you ought to do. The law always lags behind human invention or technology, and so ethics must be applied if we are to retain our humanity, our compassion, our goodwill toward others. This address will focus on scattered power. If I start with the principles we stand for as Unitarians, in particular, published on our banner, you might like to think about how we stand for justice, equity, and compassion in human relations, and the concept of community, not only on a local level, but in the context of world peace. Now I'll start with some information on scattered power. First of all, I'd like to refer to the genome surgery, which offers such hope to people like Delaney Piper, the girl in today's reading, or hope for people who suffer cancer, Alzheimer's, muscular dystrophy, cystic fibrosis, and countless other conditions that bits of our DNA predispose us for. Some background on genome surgery. In 1987, some Japanese scientists discovered an unusual structure in the DNA of E. coli bacteria, repeated sequences not ever seen before. Over the next 25 years, research into CRISPR exploded as it was discovered that these sequences act like a genetic defense system. In 2012, a team of scientists led by Dr. Jennifer Doudna of Berkeley and Dr. Emmanuel Charpentier published groundbreaking research showing how CRISPR and Cas9 could be used in the lab to snip, repair, or alter genes in any organism's DNA. The acronym CRISPR is a gem, an essential gem. It might be okay to poo-poo acronyms like WHO, World Health Organization, but imagine having to say clustered, regularly interspaced, short palindromic repeats on a regular basis. Together with a protein called Cas9, these tools can detect foreign or unwanted sequences in DNA and snip them out like a pair of molecular scissors. The possible applications are endless. Building a woolly mammoth out of Asian elephant DNA and stuff retrieved from the woolly mammoths hauled out of the permafrost. 75% of fertility clinics in the USA offer pre-implantation genetic diagnosis, which is useful in selecting embryos that test negative for serious genetic mutations, or ones that will carry a disease but not develop it. Combine PGD with CRISPR and you have the potential means to manipulate height, eye colour, athleticism, intelligence, musicality. Imagine a world in which each parent gets to custom design their own child without societal control over these decisions. CRISPR is a dramatically powerful agent of scattered power for good or ill. Power can be spread to numerous actors who can deploy it without legal oversight, professional codes like the Hippocratic Oath. Power is no longer in the hands of CEOs and heads of state. We don't know where it is and who has it. Think how powerful a modern terrorist is with a smartphone to recruit followers and organise attacks. Now, CRISPR presents us with non-binary dilemmas. Gene editing is not a do it or don't do it decision. However, there is one clear binary distinction between the types of therapies that are being developed. One is somatic and the other is germline. A somatic therapy aims to make changes in a patient's non-reproductive cells, whereas germline therapies target DNA in embryos, sperm, and eggs, making changes that not only impact the patient's disease, but can be passed down to future generations. Dr. Doudna, the pioneer of CRISPR, supports the work of people like Bruce Conklin, the guy who's hoping to cure Delaney Piper, because the therapy is somatic and the Gladstone Institutes are ethically driven. So let's look at another medical story which has ethical issues. In 2017, a biophysicist called He Jiankui took an interest in couples hoping to become parents. Not just any couples. He found two Chinese couples in which the men were HIV positive, successfully managing infections so their wives were not infected. Now, sperm washing techniques have evolved, allowing viruses to be removed before insemination. But the quest for this couple was a bit different. They wanted to ensure that their children never contract HIV and would never experience the discrimination and the pain that they had suffered. Dr. He offered these married heterosexual couples the opportunity to take part in a scientific experiment that could eliminate the risk. Consent forms were produced which stated that the main objective of this project was to produce infants who had the ability to immunise against HIV-1 virus. More sinisterly, it mentioned the possibility that there could be off-target effects. That is to say, unwanted and unintended DNA mutations, and a disclaimer of the research team's responsibility should this occur. Furthermore, the consent provided for HERS team to publish the baby photos and retain the rights to them. There are videos of HER revealing his ambition to firstly create HIV-resistant babies and then babies resistant to stacks of other nasty diseases and syndromes. However, his medical ethics clearance from a Chinese hospital contained forged signatures. Germline editing, which is forbidden in the USA and much of Europe, is also not allowed in China. In 2003, the Guiding Principles of Ethics for Stem Cell Research in China were published, and they forbade manipulation of human gametes, zygotes, and embryos. So, there was adequate knowledge and general consensus amongst professional doctors and lawyers that he should not have been pursuing this irresponsible experimentation. He Jiankui is a classic stealth rogue actor. He fooled a lab and two large hospitals. The IVF doctor who implanted the embryos did not know that they had been germline edited. The father's blood tests were falsified to make sure that the hospital did not discover their HIV status. He posted YouTube videos and gave the babies and their parents cute pseudonyms and a mushy narrative. As the father of two girls, I can't think of a gift more beautiful and wholesome for society than giving another couple the chance to start a loving family. Doctors Doudna and Charpentier and most of the scientific community were outraged, and much investigation followed. There was a house arrest, a whopping fine, 3 years imprisonment, and a lifelong ban for him on working in reproductive technology. So, not much harm done. The babies escaped publicity. God knows whether or not they are actually HIV resistant, as they exhibit mosaicism, which shows the CRISPR process failed to edit the DNA consistently, or at all in some cells. What is worrying that HER did not need millions of bucks to alter the human germline. He didn't need big pharmaceutical companies or government approval. Today, there are kits available online to the general public that promise gene editing capability. The good news is that the specifics are vague and the risk of creation of biological weapons using them is low, according to experts in the field. For a start, considerable scientific knowledge would be needed, and HER's fate signals the fact that the scientific community and governments are onto the issue. What is actually more alarming, and is something that requires less money and a lot less science, and that is 3D printing. There's a 3D printer on display in my local library. Doctors Without Borders have used them to provide war victims in Syria with prosthetic limbs. These are custom designed in 24 hours. They're 1/5 the price of conventional prosthetics. If you've ever stepped on a Lego piece, you'll know how strong the plastic is they're made from. But my slide here is of a little charmer who at the age of 24 in 2012 set up a fundraiser on YouTube to start up a company, not a corporation, not a business, and they called themselves Defence Distributed. The plan was to produce the world's first 3D printed gun, all plastic and single use. "This is an idea whose time has come," he said. "We hope the idea is stolen. We hope the file itself was manipulated and changed and improved." By May 2013, Cody Wilson from Texas, surprise, surprise, had produced a gun which he called the Liberator, posted pics of himself, and in 2 days the blueprints had been downloaded 100,000 times, allowing him to drop out of law school and run his Defence Distributed. He wasn't interested in making a fortune selling guns or creating a tech company. As a self-described crypto-anarchist who called his company Friends of Freedom and his gun the Liberator, his mission was to scatter power in ways that would be undetectable, ungovernable, and detached from the rule of law. In his own view, he wasn't a gun seller, hence no regulatory responsibilities, safety features, no background checks, no serial numbers, producing untraceable ghost guns. Well, he was obliged to add 3 to 4 ounces of metal to comply with the Undetectable Firearms Act to prevent the guns from being invisible to metal detectors and X-ray machines in airports and so on. So what he did was he popped in a little compartment so they could shove in a lump of metal that had nothing to do with the actual function of the gun. Now, Australian police used a $1,700 printer to make a stack of copies, and these guns were all shattered when a bullet was fired. That was in 2013. The government in America did succeed in making him take down his blueprints, and his next step was one of those only in America strategies. He sued the government for infringing his First Amendment rights, arguing that his online code was free speech. The Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals ruled that national security was more important than his free speech. But 3 years later, when Trump was in power, the State Department reversed its position and paid him $40,000 in attorney fees and allowed him to post blueprints for a semi-automatic weapon like the one used in the Sandy Hook Elementary School massacre. Wasn't the end of the story, because America is a federation and 19 states plus Washington reversed the decision in 2019. However, he has resurfaced last year, selling access to his website and thousands of gun blueprints, but only to American citizens, thus bypassing the export considerations of the court orders. In the book, just as an aside, you see how he warps things. He quoted this, and this is a common misquote if you look at American websites, of Jefferson, "I prefer dangerous freedom over peaceful slavery." Jefferson never said that. He actually said that Latin bit, which I'm not going to read aloud, which is more correctly translated as, "I prefer the tumult of liberty to the quiet of servitude." It's a real twisty jump, isn't it? Now, in his book, The End of Power, Moyse's name reminds us that power is impossible to measure. You can only rank what appear to be its agents, sources, or manifestation. The agents are the guys who make the guns in the living room. The sources are the accessible technology and the misuse or disempowerment of the law. And manifestations are death of victims, for example. So scattered power doesn't just empower individuals. It allows corporations to exploit the diffusion of power and amass it themselves by profiting by technology and encroaching on government activities. These days, when kids think of space, they're not thinking of NASA. They're not thinking of the Smithsonian Museum. They're thinking Elon Musk, Richard Branson, Jeff Bezos, SpaceX, Blue Origin, Virgin Galactic. And of course, these guys are not democratically elected. They're private actors. Governments cannot afford to risk leaving untapped the considerable resources and capacity of these companies as they grapple with defence, climate change, artificial intelligence, and so on. And public-private partnerships can allow for greater opportunity and visibility. And this is where we come in. We all have bullshit meters. The desire to have power and flaunt it leads to the downfall of the likes of He Jiankui, who sought academic accolades, and Cody's free speech nonsense impelled the individual states to react and shut him down. Congressmen in the USA like Ro Khanna, Californian, are committed to democratizing the benefits of Silicon Valley. Khanna is trying to scatter power with greater equality by spreading digital literacy, devising an internet bill of rights to give consumers more control over personal data, and to create jobs in areas the tech boom left behind, like West Virginia, Kentucky. We need to be on the case of our politicians, especially with regard to ethics. It's not more experts that we need necessarily. Well-meaning experts can get it wrong because of their narrow focus. Think of the story that we had today that John read. It takes a bit of imagination to work out what possible consequences of things are. Your voice in the trajectory of technology matters. It's not about getting more experts in the room. It's about participating in the debate. We can keep the concept of scattered power in mind as we grapple with questions and form opinions about other people's decisions and views, CEOs, politicians, and tech companies. We can test our opinions by the mind exercise of putting ourselves in the shoes of others. Delaney Van Piper, a future civilian space traveler, a potential victim of a 3D printed gun. Power will continue to scatter in unexpected ways. Technologies are here to stay. There is no stuffing the genie back in the bottle. Some technologies give us no choice, like facial recognition technology at airports or immigration departments. But others are optional, and we should speak up about equity and justice in their application. For example, should Centrelink continue to insist on online applications in a country with unreliable internet access, high-cost hardware, and charges for data and software? No matter where you stand as a stakeholder, scientist, consumer, 3D print enthusiast, or maybe just someone who's stumbled over some distressing information on the internet, you have the opportunity to speak up when rogue actors emerge. Corporations and even well-intentioned scientists or innovators fail to grasp potential or actual consequences of their actions. It's vital to integrate reality into our choices and check the extent of scattered power. I know you can be overwhelmed by the sheer randomness and lack of accountability that scattered power brings, but the stories I've told today are not actually victories for the rogue actors, are they? Her was banged up by the Chinese government. Cody has been curtailed to a huge degree. And if we think of our own government's misuse of tech with the robo-debt scandal, in the end, they had to abandon the scheme. So my final message is, where there's life, there's hope, and keep informed. Blessed is the path on which you travel. Blessed is the body that carries you upon it. Blessed is your heart that has heard the call. Blessed is your mind that discerns the way. May you go forth in peace.
We hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.